is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties. And it's a little bit different recording. We're trying a few new things. I've got a wonderful Master Gardener that's willing to brave this new frontier of working from home. And her name is Becky Miller Cripps, and she's a Tuolumne Master Gardener. She used to be the former Master Gardener Coordinator for Tuolumne County and just a wealth of experience. Hello, Becky.
Hi, Debbie.
It's good to hear your voice. And I saw you just for a few minutes before we figured out that maybe the bandwidth wasn't going to work. And so we're doing audio, which is perfect for radio. Audio is perfect. But you wrote a wonderful article on Earth Day, and I just loved it. And I don't think a lot of people know about Earth Day. So I'm wondering, first of all, if you can tell us, when is Earth Day?
Okay, so Earth Day in 2020 is this Wednesday, April 22nd.
Okay, and you know, for a lot, I'm just kind of guessing a lot of people may not know what Earth Day is. What is that?
Okay, Earth Day was started several years ago, in fact, a couple of decades ago, to help people be more aware of our impact on the planet. And it's to celebrate environmental factors. And also it seems this year that it's very, very appropriate because we've heard all of the reports of air quality improving around the world as people have sheltered in place and not driven as much and as factories have been shut down and things like that. So it's very appropriate at this particular time when we're all so concerned about the coronavirus that we take a moment to honor the Earth and the impact that all of us humans have on it.
That is wonderful, and you're right. It's pretty remarkable that just by not driving around, that it's had a huge impact. On this article, you were talking about the things that everybody can do, which I loved. I mean, it doesn't have to cost money to do these things, to just simple steps that can help protect things. I mean, starting off with sheltering in place, we're not driving around as much. That's had a huge impact, just what you were talking about. What are some of the other things that we could do that it collectively might have a huge impact?
One of the things that people can do, and this also corresponds to Arbor Day, there is a policy afoot right now, and I'm sorry I don't have all of the details right here at hand, but there are some areas, I think specifically Sacramento is looking at increasing urban tree cover by 25%. And so one of the things that you can do to help remove carbon dioxide, a greenhouse gas, from the air and to also lower your energy costs is to plant a tree. Another thing that you can do is simply go for a walk in your neighborhood and admire anything that you see blooming right now.
Aw, I love that. I love that. Do you do that as well? And is there something blooming in your neighborhood?
You know, this has been a really prolific spring. I think that most plants really enjoyed that warm, dry January and February that we had here in Central California. Even though many of us were concerned about potential drought, the plants seemed to really, really like it, and they started budding and putting on their spring growth early. And then they got copious amounts of rain in March, and that seemed to just fuel the bloom. And right now, wildflowers are going crazy. The roses, the climbing roses in my backyard, are turning into a waterfall of pink blooms, and the poppies in my front yard are just glorious.
Oh, that's beautiful. That is wonderful. What a great idea. And it's, you know, when you see something in bloom, it just, at least for me, and I think for most people, you just feel so much better. There's just something about looking at a beautiful bloom. You automatically, it seems like your blood pressure seems to go down and it just feels good.
And being outdoors in nature right now, we've had some really nice spring weather. So taking advantage of that and getting outside is just a mood boost. And also the movement is a physical boost. And often you'll run into someone who you can at least have a conversation with while sheltering in place or maintaining social distance. So it really is a positive experience.
It sure sounds like a positive experience to me. I've got to do more of it. You've inspired me. So what else can we do, Becky?
Well, as far as Earth Day is concerned, you can try planting a garden. You can try growing some herbs for your kitchen or planting some seeds and maybe putting them on a windowsill right now because it's too early to plant full nursery starts out in the garden. It's not quite warm enough yet. But there are a number of things that you can do to actually entertain yourself and your children if you are homeschooling them right now, if you have children that you are keeping home. And you can do a garden. There are lots of different things that you can do that will make you more aware of the earth and our dependence on it.
And having fresh produce is always so good.
Wonderful.
Yes.
In fact, if I can give a plug for those of you out there in our listening audience, if you were concerned about the start of the Sonora Farmers Market, it has been announced that it will be starting on May 30th. It's just starting a couple of weeks later than usual. So we will have our fresh produce to enjoy.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. That's good news. That's great news. Now, in your article, you even mentioned composting.
Now, are we talking about the article for Earth Day?
For Earth Day, right.
Okay. Not for gardening during this shelter in place. Okay.
I guess it could be for both, really.
Well, and a compost pile is a real way to honor the earth because rather than taking food waste or kitchen green waste and putting it either down the garbage disposal or into the landfill, you can actually use it to make gardener's gold and mix it with your grass trimmings or your plant prunings and turn it occasionally and you'll have a wonderful additive for your vegetable garden. And compost is really easy to do. People think that the instructions are really complicated, but if you think about it, nature composts in place all the time. If you've ever walked on the forest floor and notice that thick, crumbly, all different colors of brown material under your feet, basically that's compost. And you can do the same at home.
That's wonderful. Now, what if somebody says they don't feel like they have enough space? Don't you need a lot of space to do composting, or how does that work?
Well, some compost recipes do call for a minimum space of 3 feet by 3 feet by 3 feet to ensure that you have enough heat in the pile to cause the compost to break down sufficiently. But you can always just choose a little corner of your backyard and pile a bunch of leaves and let them sit for a year. And by the following year, you will have lovely leaf compost. So it doesn't require a lot of space and it doesn't require a lot of effort.
Wow. You made that sound pretty easy.
It is pretty easy.
Okay. Another inspiration. What else can we do?
Well, one of my favorite websites that people can consult is called earth911.com, and that covers all kinds of information for how to recycle and reuse common household items, to where you can recycle problem materials, and they even have articles about Earth Day and thought-provoking environmental quotes, all kinds of things that you can reference by going to that website. So So I would recommend that all of our listeners do check out earth911.com.
Well, it's a sure catchy phrase. I mean, it really is. It's something that I think most people probably can remember. So, and that's great advice. How about, is there anything, another simple thing that everybody can do as far as trying to save our planet? I know it sounds pretty impressive, but that's what we're trying to do.
Well, I want to give you a quote that I just found on earth911.com as we were speaking. And this quote is actually from Paul McCartney. And it says, "Bye, bye," says the sign in the shop window, as in B-U-Y, B-U-Y.
Okay.
Why, says the junk in the yard. So one of the things we can remember is don't buy so much. I know that our economy is sort of in retreat at the moment as we all stay home. But if we could just vote with our wallets and choose to buy fewer things and reuse the things that we have, it would make a huge difference in all the landfilling and the recycle problems that we have around the world. Your listeners probably know that China no longer accepts all of our plastic waste. And since they are such a manufacturing giant now, they can specify that they only want our plastic to be in the form of sterile, pelletized, ready to go into the extruder types of materials. So what do we do with all the plastic that we buy that can't be recycled? One of the ways to do that, one of the ways to impact the earth is to switch out what you're buying in plastic and buy it in some other kind of container. For example, my daughter told me that there are some yogurt companies now that are marketing their products in glass. I have not found that in local markets, but I haven't looked really closely. I know that you can buy some milk products in glass. So we should think about what we want to switch up to avoid creating so much plastic.
Good advice. I know the Master Gardeners have a really popular event. It's Save Our Polystyrene, which typically is in May, but we're not going to be able to have it because it's usually in conjunction with Tuolumne County Hazardous Waste Collection, where they're kind of looking to delay that. But I know there's a lot of concerned citizens in Tuolumne County because that is the number one question on the hotline as far as when are we going to have that collection day and prevent polystyrene, otherwise known as styrofoam, from entering the landfill. So I've got to applaud everybody that does save their styrofoam or polystyrene and prevent it from entering the landfill so that we can collect it and send it to Dart Manufacturing, which is in Lodi, and prevent that from entering the landfill.
And hopefully we'll be able to be back out of quarantine sooner rather than later, and we'll be able to schedule that polystyrene collection for all the people who are waiting for us and are saving it in their garages.
Yes. I know I'm one of those too that have been saving, and it does, it's amazing. It does add up. I mean, you look at how much is adding up and the space it's taking and that's all the space that would be in the landfill. So it's a really worthwhile endeavor that the Master Gardeners perform. But Becky, you're not going to believe this. We're just about out of time. Do you have any other closing suggestions?
I do have, in fact, a couple of things as I was going over the Earth 911 website as we talked, a couple of things caught my attention. One is a quote from Kurt Vonnegut Jr. that says, "I really wonder what gives us the right to wreck this poor planet of ours." And a couple of things I think we can think about along those lines of what are we throwing away as opposed to reusing. And one of my favorite thoughts is there is no such place as away. So when we throw something away, quote unquote, it has to go somewhere. So two things that I've been thinking about recently are paper towels, because my daughter, of all people, stopped using paper towels in her household and they went to using rewashable rags. And as I was reading online, there are a number of people who have stopped using paper towels and are blogging about it because they say not only is it a one-use product, but it comes wrapped in plastic. So it's a double problem. The other thing is food waste. When we go to a restaurant and we simply send back the uneaten food that we no longer want and say that it's garbage, it ends up going into a bag and then being transported in a truck and taken to a transfer station and then being sent to a landfill, when what we should probably be doing is taking that food home, feeding it to someone's chickens, or putting the green waste into our own compost pile.
Those are great, great suggestions. I really love that. And Becky, thank you so much. Great advice. It's a great article. You'll be able to find it in the Union Democrat. And thank you so much. And we will talk again soon.
You are so bye. Welcome, Debbie. Stay safe and
you
stay
too. Sane. Okay. Bye.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell, the Master Gardener Coordinator, Calaveras and Tuolumne County. And I'm back with Linda Reevely, our Tuolumne Master Gardener. Hello, Linda.
How are you doing?
Good. And one of the things that we've talked about for a long time, and we just haven't done it, is periodically doing book reviews.
Oh, yes.
Because you are a voracious reader.
And I love books.
Yes, I do too. Books are wonderful.
A book review on the radio is a great tradition. You hear book reviews on National Public Radio and on other places, but ours are very specific to what we think you might want to know as people who have a landscape or a garden or simply live in the mother lode. And the first book I'd like to talk to you about is one that everyone who cares about nature and lives in the mother lode should own.
That sounds like all of us.
That's all
everybody.
Of us. All of us. This is The Laws Field Guide to the Sierra Nevada by John Muir Laws. Yes, indeed, he is a descendant of John Muir, and he's related to Frederick Laws Olmsted, because Laws was...
Let us know who that is.
Designer of Golden Gate Park.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
He's
and world famous
John
landscape
Muir
designer.
Is a wonderful fellow. He has given a couple classes to the local Audubon Society on about birds and about drawing birds. He's a great teacher, very charming young man, and really a superb artist. And I'm holding this little book in my hands. It's maybe 4 inches by 8 inches. It's about an inch thick.
So it's easy to
so
put in your
fits
backpack.
In your backpack or your pocket.
Right. Okay.
And it is the guide to everything Sierra Nevada. It begins, the first pages are fungus and lichens, fungi okay. and lichens, trees, shrubs, vines, and ferns, wildflowers, organized by color.
That is great.
Which is kind of the newest way to do that. It's the way that the Sierra Club books do it, too.
Okay.
Spiders, insects, and other small animals. And these include aquatic animals that aren't insects, fish, amphibians and reptiles, birds, mammals, and animal tracks, galls, weather, and stars.
Ooh, how
and
fun.
So let's go to the back of the book where the index is. One of the startling things about the index is that on every single page, every two-page spread, there's a realistic picture of a bug, so real that sometimes you flip them open and you're sure there's a bug in your book. it's lovely. It's really
That's
the
awfully.
Page with F's, cleverly enough, has a fly. it's really, really kind of nice. Nice book. In the back, they have star charts, and they have star charts for summer and for fall, around fall equinox. And there's ones for winter. And as you understand that the stars move, we move, everybody moves in the whole greater cosmos. And so where various constellations are appear at different times in different seasons. And these are really good star charts in this book that show you where to look for the really big and important constellations. That's kind of fun.
That is fun.
He has a little bit on predicting the weather, including a picture of all different kinds of clouds.
Oh, that is fun.
And, you know, clouds have names. The different kinds have lovely names. There's alto cumulus clouds, meaning high cumulus, the fluffy clouds that are arranged into sort of not quite mare's tails, but little fluffy sort of lines that go across the hill. Cumulus, the big fluffy low cotton ball clouds, those. Stratocumulus, which are low-level clouds with some clumping. Those are the ones that you often see in the evening when you look off to the west, not the east. If you look up to the east where we live here, what you're looking at are thunderheads. And those things are generally, those are somewhere between nimbostratus and altostratus clouds, right up into cumulonimbus clouds. And then he's got a little picture of lenticular clouds. Now, I love lenticular clouds. I have some great photographs of them. They often happen if there's a big forest fire.
Oh, really?
And they look like flying saucers.
Oh, my gosh.
They do. I mean, see the picture?
Oh, yeah, they do.
Look like flying saucers.
They look exactly like flying saucers.
When the Rim Fire was burning, we had altocumulus every day, and they are just so odd looking. You keep going, ooh, that's a big flying saucer.
Yes.
It has a section on galls. I love galls. We're always picking them up. You find them on the bottom of oak leaves and things. They're super interesting. This book has some great pictures and shows you what you're really looking at. Galls are the plant's reaction to irritation that occur when they're invaded by insects.
But they make spectacular galls. They're so pretty. Some of them are in the shape of stars.
Yeah.
They're so unusual. We've had
the little rosette and the rose gall. The rose gall wasp makes these ones on roses that are up to about a half inch across with total long spikes sticking out of them. They're just astounding looking. And he's got some nice pictures of galls and tells you how to identify them. He's got some thing on scat, animal feces, and how to identify various animals by what they leave behind them.
Which, believe it or not, is good to know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you're walking through
if you wonder if you're looking
at a countryside and
there's a bobcat around here, well, you can look at the picture and go, oh, I think that's bobcat.
Or even a mountain lion. I mean, there's been mountain lion sightings in various areas.
Mountain lions, it says, leave large piles, segmented and often buried, and they contain fur and bones because that's what those guys eat.
Right.
So that's kind of fun. There's tracks.
Oh, look at those pictures.
Yep, local tracks of things that you would see. And that leads us to the section on mammals, which covers everything. Some mammals, and you know, I'm a Western girl. I'm born and brought up here. I lived in the woods all my life. My dad was a naturalist, essentially. And there's a few things in here I'm going, really? We have those? Ooh. And I will tell you that we have them often very close to us. The other day we were coming back through Columbia and I saw a rather large fox run across the road. Main old 49 right across the road in daylight.
That's a surprise.
So I don't know what it was doing out there, but it was out there. Our red foxes here aren't normally terribly red. They tend to be kind of yellowish brown to gray. A gray fox is very dark gray and it's how you really tell them apart. A good sized fox will look a lot like a small coyote. You can really only tell them apart in that coyotes tend to move when they move with their heads down.
Okay.
And foxes often carry their heads up.
That's a great description.
So
that's
it's a handy, quick way to say, ooh, fox or coyote.
Yeah.
Yeah. A fox pulls his head up when he moves. A fox always thinks he's shorter than he is and he moves his head up. Coyote knows how tall he is and holds his head down because it's easier and it's more aerodynamic. There's some nice pictures of mountain lions and bears and some things about bears and things like that. So it's a great little book. It's got a lot of nice information about that kind of thing. He's got particularly good stuff on the things he calls dirt swimmers, moles and gophers, and the identification
that's a great
of
name
moles
for
and gophers that he's got really good things on. Next section is birds. You really can't get better bird identification than this book for our area.
Okay.
It is terrific.
It's a huge section.
It's
on
a
birds.
Great big section with lots and lots of pictures. And I think paintings are oftentimes more diagnostic than a photograph.
Yes.
Because photographs are so determined on lighting.
Right, right. Oh, you're right. Good point.
And
good point.
A painting can show you what's important and different
right.
that isn't obscured by a shadow or some bird holding its head
funny. Right, good point.
He's got a section on reptiles, including lizards. We have some really cool lizards that live here. And ones with fragile tails, the whiptails and the skinks. Mm-hmm. And their tails break off and they grow new ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of cool.
That is cool.
He has snakes. So he
it's good to identify those.
Always good to be able to identify a snake.
Yes.
Most our snakes here are not rattlesnakes, but there are some that are.
There are some.
We need to be able to recognize that specific head shape.
Yes.
Not all our rattlesnakes have rattles either. Don't think you're always going to hear them, because a large percentage of ones with rattles get killed, and therefore the ones that don't have rattles tend to reproduce.
Ah.
So we're seeing more and more of them.
More without rattles. That's a little bit unnerving.
It's
but...
very unnerving. He's got some salamanders in here that are pretty interesting. I think I've already read you a section of another book I reviewed some time ago, Kate Marion Child's book about the foothills, the oak foothills, that talks about salamanders.
Oh.
There's some interesting stories there. And then our frogs. Our frogs are in danger. We always have to worry about our frogs. The ones I have most of in my yard are Pacific chorus frogs. Love them. Not that I think they're particularly joyful singers. They go, brah, brah. But it always makes us laugh, so there you go. There's some good stuff on fish, and then the insect section is way better than you would even imagine, because you can actually look at this and go, oh, yeah.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
I recognize that.
There's a little section on saltwater clams and that kind of stuff, and also dragonflies and all sorts of other insects, ants, fireflies. I don't think we have fireflies here. I'm not sure, but something like fireflies.
But beetles.
Beetles.
Including what would typically be called ladybugs, but they're actually beetles.
Ladybird beetles.
Ladybird beetles.
There's a very nice piece on butterflies and butterfly identification. Because butterflies, you know, we tend to think of them as always having, this kind has that pattern.
Right.
But that's not really true.
Oh.
There are different color varieties within species of butterflies.
Okay.
And so there's some, for instance, that are white, or blue, or even kind of grayish color, like the Boy's Duval blue butterfly has those four color variants.
Who knew?
And
unless you looked at the book.
Unless you looked at the book. And the book is wonderful.
It is.
It really, it can help you figure out whether you're looking at a California sister or a red admiral very quickly, because they're quite different, except that they're all black and white and have an orange spot.
Right.
So that's real helpful. The plant ID section is organized by color, the wildflowers. And then he further divides it into the kind of symmetry the plants have, whether they're bilateral or divided into five-part symmetry. And that really helps you nail down what you're looking at. And, of course, the color of the flower really helps, which is always nice. And that's,
I think, absolutely,
the best way to organize those kinds of
things.
Yes. And then there's trees and shrubs and vines, which has not only trees and shrubs and vines, but a lot of fascinating information about them. And just simple little, a couple line things, like small-leaved cream bush smells like fermented apples.
Oh!
So if you're going, I don't know, is that or is it this ocean spray over here? Which is which? Well, what's it smell like?
Good tip.
And you've got
excellent
your identification
tip.
Just sorted right out. And he points out those things that we always learn in botany about alternate and opposite leaves,
right,
and simple and compound
but
leaves.
But it's always good for a reminder.
Yep, and it's always really good to remember how that works.
Right.
The tree identification is real good. And then the fungus. We have the most amazing fungus in the foothills. We grow more darn mushrooms, and they're just super fascinating. Hint, I'm not likely to tell you to eat wild ones, because I'm not ever going to tell you to eat wild ones. Find somebody who really knows their stuff before you ever attempt it in this area. But you could certainly identify the mushrooms you find, and there's great joy
that's
in
fun.
Knowing the name.
Oh, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
That's our book. That's The Law's Field Guide to the Sierra Nevada. One of the best books for regionalized identification of all of nature I've ever come across in my life.
Well, this has been wonderful, Linda. Thank you so much for this book review. And I have to admit, I don't have it in my library, but I'm putting it on my list for me personally to get.
Absolutely.
So thank you again.